Will the House please come into order?
I forgot to put that on here this morning, so I penciled it in for you.
Okay.
And there's a script for it to refer it to the
RA. Okay. Will the Chief Clerk please call the roll?
Anderson.
Here.
Bagby.
Here.
Barbudo.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Blickley.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Brechtel. Brown, Buchanan, Byrd, Kennedy, Carson, Childers, Cohey, Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Edmonds, Esquivel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan, Hallinan excused, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen, Kimball, Landon, Lockhart, Lebno, Madden, McKim, McComey, Miller, Millen, Moniz, Patton, Peasley, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp excused, Korberg, Roscoe, Simlick, Shepperson, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker. I'm about 58 present, 2 excused, long week, sorry.
We're all here except when we're not all there. The prayer today is given by Chaplain Dell Hansen, representing Veterans Medical Center of Cheyenne.
Let us pause. Heavenly Father, you know even things that are uncertain and obscure, and our very thoughts and feelings which are not hidden from you. Cleanse us from our secret faults and wrongs. You know how weak we are, both in soul and in body. Give us strength, O Lord, in our faults and frailties to be sustained and strengthened for the work before us. Allow these legislators to examine the needs of our state so that it may grow and be able to support the future generations who will call Wyoming home while still living in balance and harmony with yourself and the world around us. We are controlled by clocks, and this work week is almost complete. Our energies are drained, and our nerves have become frayed. The trials and demands continue without end, and they often seem urgent, even chaotic. Your gifts of power and strength and patience are so important to maintain us and allow us to set proper priorities. Help us to replace urgency with submission to your will. Lord, help us to simply live in this world, not to be controlled by it. Grant us the grace to adapt our ways to your plans and your will. Grant us the wisdom to place control in your hands and replace our limitations and impatience with your unlimited power and peace. Lord, this day we continue to seek your protection on all of those who have served and those who continue to serve as defenders and protectors of this nation, our great state, and our communities. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'll ask you. I thought you did.
I'll check.
Good morning. Journal Committee Report.
Mr. Speaker, Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 25th has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Moniz, Representative Barbuto.
Representatives Millen and Zwanitzer.
May we have privilege of the floor, please?
Please proceed.
It is our pleasure today to introduce the Wyoming National Guard Youth Challenge Program, the students, and their instructor, Barbara Smith. Please welcome to the House.
Welcome to the House of Representatives. Representative Stewart, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, friends and neighbors. It's my annual pleasure to introduce, as often referred by me as the best darn thing that's ever happened to me, and I'm happy to share with you today. Now, we got to keep the snide remarks from the peanut gallery down today so I don't blush again. Dr. Diane Noten, my wife.
Welcome, Diane. Nice to have you here today. The nurse of the day is Betsy Hartman from Cheyenne and Donna Hayes from Riverton.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hales, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce my granddaughter, who is one of our pages today. She's the girl with the long blonde hair. She's an honor student from Castle Rock, Colorado Middle School, and my first favorite son-in-law. Her dad is up there in the balcony. Welcome, Matt and Grace.
Welcome to the House of Representatives. Is it Grace? Welcome, Grace. It's nice to have you here today. I would like to take a point of privilege in the West Gallery. We have two University of Wyoming freshmen who you know from last year as pages in the House, Taylor Lenz and John Root. I don't know what's happened to them, but they look more mature and different. Chairman Illaway, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a reminder that tomorrow night, the Cheyenne Symphony Orchestra will be playing. If you're not going home over the weekend or the roads get bad, we'd love to have you. There are still tickets available, and you still have the, if you have it on the your desk about the symphony, it's a great symphony, and please prevail yourself if you'd like to.
Thank you. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, message number 172. The bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations, 20, ayes 28, noes 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 7 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Stewart, excused, Philp. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 13 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, no, Stewart, excused, Philp. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 39 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Stewart. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 48 in gross. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen. No, Stewart. Excused, Phelps. I am representing Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 61 engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Stewart. Excused, Phelps. I am representing Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 22 engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Madden, McKim, Peterson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Excused, Gilmore, Hallinan. Signed, representing Cohey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 45 engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Cohey, Gilmore, Madden, McKim, Peterson, Zwanitzer, Dave. No, Carson. Excused, Hallinan. Signed, representing Cohey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred Senate File 64 engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Cohey, Gilmore, Madden, McKim, Peterson. No, Zwanitzer, Dave. Excused, Hallinan. Signed, representing Cohey, Chairman. Mr. Peek, in the committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 52 engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Byrd, Kraft, Harvey, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 59 engrossed. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Byrd, Kraft, Harvey, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Representative Lockhart, any re-referrals? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer Senate File 66 to your committee number 2, Appropriations, along with Senate File 52, similar move to Appropriations.
Hearing no objections, so ordered. We're at that order of business of Senate files on first reading. The first Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 1.
Senate File 1, introduced by the Appropriation Committee, an act make appropriations for the biennium commencing July 1st, 2010 and ending June 30th.
First reading of the bill. The Senate File 1 is referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. We're at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage consent list. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading consent list consisting of Senate files 3, 4, 5, 8, 10, 11, 12, 26, 43, 51, and 63.
Would anyone like to remove a bill from the list? Will the reading clerk please read all the consent bills through the enacting clause?
Senate File 3, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to apiaries, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 4, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to special district elections, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 5, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to special districts, public records, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 8, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to child support, medical support of children, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 10, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to state parks, Bear River State Park, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 11, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to state parks, acquisition and disposition of lands, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 12, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to state parks and historic sites, boundaries, and designations, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 26, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to crimes and offenses, eligibility, concealed weapons permit, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 43, introduced by Senator Meyer, an act relating to game and fish, special hunting season extension, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 51, introduced by Senator Anderson, an act relating to state symbols, official state code, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 63, introduced by Senator Meyer, an act relating to water irrigation district assessments, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, Bagby, Barbuto, Berger, Blake, Flickery, Bonner, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Byrd, Kennedy, Carson, Childers, Cohey, Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Edmonds, Esquivel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan excused, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen, Kimball, Landon, Lockhart, Lubnow, Madden, McKim, McComey, Miller, Millen, Moniz, Patton, Peasley, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp excused, Korberg, Roscoe, Simlick, Shepperson, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused. As to Senate File 3, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused. As to Senate File 4, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused. As to Senate File 5, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused. As to Senate File 8, are there any changes? Korberg, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 aye, 2 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 10, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused. As to Senate File 11, are there any changes? Miller, aye to no. Peasley, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 aye, 2 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 12, are there any changes? Are there any changes? Miller, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 1 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 26, are there any changes? Byrd, aye to no. Hales, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 aye, 2 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 43, are there any changes? Teeters, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 1 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 51, are there any changes? Jorgensen, aye to no. Zwanitzer Dave, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 aye, 2 no, 2 excused. As to Senate File 63, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bills 3, 4, 5, excuse me, Senate Files 3, 4, 5, 8, 10, 11, 12, 26, 43, 51, and 63 have passed the House. We're at that order of business. The bill's on third reading and final passage. Regular list. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 9.
Senate File 9, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to juvenile detention facilities standards, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Excuse me. Senate File 9, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson, Bagby, Barbudo, Berger, Blake, Blickrey, Bonner, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Byrd, Kennedy, Carson, Childers, Cohey, Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Edmonds, Esquivel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan excused, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen, Kimball, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, Madden, McKim, McComey, Miller, Millen, Moniz, Patton, Peasley, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp excused, Korberg, Roscoe, Simlick, Shepperson, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused.
Senate File 9, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 9 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 16.
Senate File 16, introduced by the Revenue Committee, an act relating to taxation and revenue, property tax review of assessment, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senate File 16, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, Bagby, Barbudo, Berger, Blake, Blickrey, Bonner, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Byrd, Kennedy, Carson, Childers, Cohey, Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Edmonds, Esquivel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan excused, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen, Kimball, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, McKim, McComey, Miller, Millen, Moniz, Patton, Peasley, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp excused, Korberg, Roscoe, Simlick, Shepperson, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 excused.
Senate File 16, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 16 has passed the House. Chairman Berger, would you come up, please, for a moment? The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 19.
Senate File 19, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to DUI impairment period and period for enhanced penalties, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senate File 19, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, Bagby, Barbudo, Berger, Blake, Blickrey, Bonner, Brechtel, Brown,
Aye. Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
No.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan excused. Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Kimball.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Filth excused. Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlich.
No.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Steward.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 53 ayes, 5 noes, 2 excused.
Senate File 19, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 19 has passed the House. Next bill for a consideration is Senate File 28.
Senate File 28, introduced by Senator Martin, an act relating to Intergovernmental Cooperation State Loan and Investment Board Loan Refinancing, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senate File 19, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll. Senate File 28, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel. Brechtel. Brown.
No.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore. Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
No.
Hallinan excused. Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Kimball.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
No.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley. Pedersen, Peterson,
aye.
Filth excused, Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
no.
Semlich,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
no.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Brechtel, aye to no. Jorgensen, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 47 ayes, 11 noes, 2 excused.
Senate File 28, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 28 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 47.
Senate File 47, introduced by Senator Schiffer, an act relating to paramutual wagering simulcasting, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment to Senate File 47. Ladies and gentlemen, in our love fest the other day, we tried to meet in the middle on everything, and one of the things that I hate to admit that the other body got right was the definition of the Horsemen's Association. Basically, this deletes our Committee of the Whole Amendment and takes it back to the other body's definition. The reason we want to do that is because this really, the way we have it now in our version, is it puts us teetering on the edge of being in violation with the Interstate Commerce Commission, which would not allow us to take out-of-state bets. We want to take those out-of-state bets. So what this does is it just takes it back to the Senate version. I would ask for your favorable consideration and stand for questions.
Anyone else on the amendment? Question being called. We are voting on third reading amendment number one of Senate File 47. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number one is passed. Senate File 47, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison. Dirks,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Hales,
aye.
Hallinan excused, Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
no.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
no.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Kimball,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Miller, Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
no.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Filth excused, Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 52 ayes, 6 no, 2 excused.
Senate File 47, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 47 has passed the House. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 72.
Senate File 72, introduced by the Appropriations Committee. An act relating to the Wyoming Retirement System Plan contributions being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number one to Senate File 72 and would ask for your favorable aye. Essentially, what I'm attempting to do is make sure that we have equitability and fairness in the way that we implement Senate File 72. We have a lot of people inside the retirement system that are not state employees. And all this amendment does is it prohibits the employers of those people that are not state employees from paying the 1.43%. I want to make sure that everybody is treated equally and fairly and that the 1.43% is going to come out of their paycheck. So that's what the amendment does, and I would stand for questions.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Pedersen.
Mr. Speaker, I was just urging a little caution. My favorite coach, my favorite rancher, and my favorite horticulturist have brought forward something that I think is really worth talking about on the floor. But I agree with the principle of it, especially when you consider the fact that we have lower budgets and if people try and fold the cost of this into their lower budget, that'll just put them in a tougher spot. And I understand, and it's also creating an issue of equality and parity throughout the entire system. But it's just a question of should they be able to make that budgeting decision on their own. And I think it would be imprudent of them to fold in if you have a lower budget, just fold in more costs and pick up more. But maybe that's their own choice to do it, but maybe it isn't.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps you read the email that I received from a Cheyenne worker, and then my response, I sent it to the body. It came to all of us, so I replied to all of you. But and it is correct, and that's why I've signed on to this. I think there is an issue of kind of buy-in or fundamental fairness. But I think when people pay a little bit into something and it's their money, it's you look at it a little closer. You learn a little more about it. You become a little more educated about it. You care about it a little more. I think those are all important issues. The only thing so that's why I'm on this, and I urge your support, is that some of these government entities, I think the previous speaker, my good friend, it's cheaper for some of them to pay this in lieu of a pay raise because they get the tax benefit, don't have to pay all the Social Security, so it helps hold down some of their budgets. It's really my assumption, I think, as as a teacher, when I go back to Casper, I guess that could be negotiated in. I guess I'm fully thinking that I'm going to pay 1.43%. I haven't heard any talk that folks in my community were going to try to get that rolled into our current deal. So I think it's an issue of kind of buy-in, fundamental fairness, but there is that other issue. And, you know, do what you want, but I urge your support for the amendment. Thank you.
Representative McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I hear the discussion, I see both sides of the issue. We're saying, you know, we're putting some money aside to help with the different institutions to pay the employer share, and we don't want them to all of a sudden wind up paying the employee share. I'll take you back 30, 25 years, if you'll excuse me. I know we're living in a modern time. But when I was elected to be mayor of the municipality that I'm coming from now, we didn't have a lot of money. Things were really bad. But the council and I were struggling to figure out how we could give our employees an increase, salary increase, and do it as cheaply as we could. And we came up with this idea to pay the employees, or part of the employee share. Later on, we paid the rest of it into the retirement system because we didn't have to pay matching Social Security. We didn't have to pay more to the retirement system by giving them a gross increase in salary. And they were already paying taxes on that amount. So they were able to take and put all of that into their pocket. So it was a win-win for everybody. However, there is a downside to that because it decreases your gross salary. So down the road, many years, you'll receive less from Social Security and you'll receive less from the retirement system. So I just want to stand up here and explain a little bit about how this works for the body. So when you consider what's being done here, you know, think about these things in your mind. As an employer, trying to find a way to provide a benefit for your employee, and yet in these kind of times, be able to do it as cheaply as you can yourself to help your own pocketbook. And that's how this evolved. Thank you.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Like it's been touched on before, this is kind of a philosophical question, and I can see the reason for the amendment. But the two things are kind of tugging against each other is the undeniable advantage that, you know, if everybody saw that they were contributing directly, they would have some skin in the game, and they'd take some ownership of the retirement system. So in that sense, the amendment is good. On the other hand, I suppose the other argument is that, you know, something like this is really, you know, getting into, I guess, the micromanaging of local units of government and other members, member groups. So it's just kind of a matter of how you look at it. I guess I don't see it, you know, the critical thing is that this amendment does not interfere with the essential goal that we have to fix this system and to make it healthy again. And that part is good. But, you know, we'll just have to, if it passes, it passes. And if we have to take it to a conference, we'll just have to see what the other side thinks about it. So I guess use your own judgment. Thank you.
Representative Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the important question is for us to ask ourselves today is why is it important for employees to contribute to the retirement system? And I think that what the good representative who I sit next to said rings true to me. If you don't have some monetary interest in something that you're purchasing, whether it's a product or a service, I don't think you understand the value of it. And we see that particularly in the healthcare field, where we see those individuals who qualify for Medicaid who don't pay any copay or anything freely use the emergency room system and which is an extremely expensive system, when they could just as well use a pediatrician in some cases if it's something that if their kids have a cold or chest congestion. And so that concept of seeing value in something if you have to pay for it a little bit, I think, is more understandable, because if they were paying for that, they would understand that that emergency room use might be $300, where if they could go to a pediatrician, they might be looking at $60. So that is kind of part of the reason that I wanted to suggest this amendment. And the thing about it is that further makes me feel good about this bill and this amendment is it's a win-win situation for the employee. If the employee decides they don't want to be within the retirement system, all the contributions that they make is they can withdraw. And not only can they withdraw those contributions, but they can withdraw them and they will have earned 5% interest while they were in the system. I would love to have a savings account right now where I could earn 5%. So that's a benefit for them. And, of course, if they choose not to withdraw them, then I think they've built this wonderful guaranteed benefit retirement system that'll essentially issue them a check every month for the rest of their life. And that's something that a lot of people in the private sector are beginning to envy. And I think this is such a good thing for employees that I would urge the body to approve the amendment and the bill.
Representative Gilmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's unusual I get to bump the speaker out of the way here. I just want to clarify a thing. As a retired state employee, I was in the system for some 40 years, 39 years, 9 months, and a couple of days. And there was never the ability to just withdraw. You had to quit your job to withdraw. And then you only got the portion that you paid in, not the portion that the state paid in. And so my first probably 15 years, I paid it all in. And then in lieu of raises, the state started paying it in for me. So I just wanted to clarify that. You vote how you want to. On this one, I think it's fair that everybody has some skin in the game, and so I'm actually on and for this amendment under the fairness. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. I have a question that may be a bit inane, but on page 4 of the bill, line 21, subparagraph C, I guess line 23, where it reads, the employer may pay these contributions by a reduction in cash salary of the member or by an offset against a future salary increase or by a combination of a reduction in salary or an offset against a future salary increase. And then provided that, and we're just adding the new Romanet paragraph 5. Is there any conflict at all in the first two sentences of subparagraph C with Romanet 5? I don't think so, but there was a question in my mind. And then I would also like to hear a little bit more that was about the issue raised by the representative from Cheyenne as to why we would not want to do this. Thank you.
Representative McComey. Oh, just a moment. We're still at the first time.
Anyone else for their first time?
Jack, you want this?
Anyone else for their first time? For a second time, Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You did raise a valid point there. I hadn't picked that up. You do have conflicting one place that says one thing, and now we're coming down below. But I really don't think it conflicts because it's just talking about the 1.4-something percent, I do believe. The first time I got up, I gave you an explanation of what was going on and how this worked, but the good gentleman that was just got out of the speaker's chair made a statement that may have been misleading to some of you, and that the salary that's paid when you got your contribution plate in lieu of a salary, whatever you quit or whatever you did, and you could withdraw that money. You got to withdraw the money that was also paid in for you as part of your salary. So the states with the state's match, you couldn't get out. So you took a 50% hit on your retirement contribution. And that money stayed in the plan and has one of the things that's helped keep the plan as solvent as it is today. Because it was able to use to offset all of these years we probably should have been looking towards some type of increased contribution. So by you not being able to pull out your employer's share, plus the interest that it's earned, that was one of the things that kept the plan going. As I looked at this and thought it over, I'm afraid I'm going to have to be on the bill against the amendment and for the bill because I do think we're starting to micromanage here. And I agree with the good gentleman from that stood at this microphone last before me. And so on and against the amendment.
Chairman Landon, for your second time.
Mr. Speaker, I would just try to address the issue that you brought up concerning page 4, starting at line 21. That of course, is current language, and I believe that is going to continue to apply to the first 5.5 or so percent, and that this particular amendment here is just going to apply for over that amount.
I don't think there's any conflict rather than me standing up again, but I'm okay with the language. Representative, anyone else before Representative Teeters? Representative Teeters, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is absolutely not micromanaging. If we wanted to avoid micromanaging, we wouldn't have allowed these people into the state retirement pool to begin with. It's our pool. We set the rules. The intent of this legislation is that we increase the amount of contribution from the employer and the state, which we're trying to do. If we do not pass this amendment, we will not be able to ensure that both parties are paying an equal amount. Essentially, what could happen in the school districts if we don't pass this is they could give everybody a 1.75% cost of living adjustment. We didn't vote for an ECA on this for this year because we can't afford it. If they do that, that's money they're taking out of the block grant that should have been spent in the classroom, which is where we all think the money should be spent. So this is an issue of equitability and fairness, and I would urge your support of the amendment.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 72. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
I'll call it that the amendment is defeated. Please stand. Ayes, please stand. Okay, wait. All right. Ayes stand, please. Okay, stay where you are. Third reading amendment number 1 is passed. Senate File 72 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Bagby. Barbudo. Berger. Blake. Flickery. Bonner. Brechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Byrd. Kennedy. Carson?
No.
Childers?
Aye.
Cohey?
Aye.
Connolly?
No.
Kraft?
No.
Davison?
No.
Dirks?
No.
Edmonds?
Aye.
Esquivel?
No.
Gilmore?
No.
Gingery?
Aye.
Goggles?
No.
Hales?
No.
Hallinan excused. Hammonds?
No.
Harshman?
Aye.
Harvey?
Aye.
Illaway?
Aye.
Yagi?
Aye.
Jorgensen?
Aye.
Kimball?
No.
Landon?
Aye.
Lockhart?
Aye.
Lubno?
Aye.
Madden?
Aye.
McKim?
No.
McComey?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Millen?
No.
Moniz?
Aye.
Patton?
Aye.
Peasley?
Aye.
Pedersen?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Philp excused. Korberg?
Aye.
Roscoe?
Aye.
Simlick?
Aye.
Shepperson?
Aye.
Stewart?
Aye.
Sebson?
Aye.
Teeters?
Aye.
Thompson?
No.
Throne?
No.
Wallace?
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan?
No.
Zwanitzer Dave?
No.
Mr. Speaker?
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Bagby? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 37 ayes, 21 noes, 2 excused.
Senate File 72, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 72 has passed the House. Representative Peasley, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I appreciate all the cards and letters from those of you that have felt sorry for me over the last few weeks, not having anyone to point out in the audience or in the gallery. The other day we had 56 kids I thought were from my county and district. It turned out they were all from Representative Derrick's and Kennedy's district. And word got out about my sadness and my... And I recall 50 years ago this month giving my first Valentine to this beautiful little redhead. And I've given her one every 50 years since. And to the light and love of my life, Nancy Peasley, I'd like you all to recognize her in the North Gallery. I love you, honey.
Representative Teeters, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And God bless you for putting up with Frank. But... Mr. Speaker. This morning, it is my privilege and honor to introduce the Wyoming Teacher of the Year, Ms. Christina Mills. She teaches in Lingle Fort Laramie High School. She's a great asset to our community. She actually taught my younger sister, didn't you? And we're very honored to have her today. And the good Majority Floor Leader is going to tell us a little bit more about her accomplishments this morning.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, just wanted to mention some of Ms. Mills' accomplishments. Over the past 4 years, her sophomores have always received proficient or even advanced scores on the district writing assessment. Also, due to her efforts, all of the Lingle Fort Laramie seniors received a Hathaway scholarship and have scored average or above average on the ACTs. She's also very involved in the athletic programs at Lingle Fort Laramie High School. She's the head coach for the girls' high school varsity basketball team. And she also takes a lot of time outside of school hours to interact with parents via email to let them know how their students, how their children are doing, and works with them on a consistent basis to make sure that those students achieve their highest goals. Ms. Christina Mills.
Hey. Welcome to the House, Christina. You may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to take an opportunity to thank all of you for all of your efforts and education, everything that you do on a daily basis for us. You make my job easier and make my job what it is, and my students and everything without what you do here and everything that you help us with in education is just wonderful. And I just wanted to thank all of you and take this time to say thank you from everyone that's in the field of education. We appreciate it.
Well, congratulations to you. It's a wonderful honor. We are at that order of business of consideration of bills on general... Wait a minute. We apparently are not. Representative Stewart, would you like privilege of the floor?
I would, Mr. Speaker.
Please proceed.
If everyone would please join me in welcoming some guests from the Little Snake Valley, town of Bags, Wyoming. Tommy Sue and her fifth grade class, three of her students came over today to watch us work, and good friends of mine as well. Please welcome them.
Hey!
Welcome to the House of Representatives. Any other announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The House is resolved into Committee of the Whole. Representative Connolly. Yay.
Thank you. The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. My marching orders for today from the Madam Majority Whip is to rock and roll. We have today and Monday to get through general file. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 18. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 18, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to limited liability companies revisions. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brown, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Kimball, Lubna, Miller, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of your bill. What is the pleasure? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Let me first say, before it's just totally introduced, that I've been privileged to be chairman of the Corporations Committee and have been blessed with three excellent attorneys, and they will discuss this bill after I introduce it, and I just want to thank them for their efforts. They've made my life very easy on the committee. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 18 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. And I think it's best if they're discussed as we go through the bill. Representative from House District 14 will discuss an article, and then the representative from House District 56 will discuss additional articles, and then the representative from House District 31 will discuss further articles. So if you will just kind of watch where they are, that's probably the easiest way. It's a longer bill. It's not as long as we did last year with the Business Corporations Act, but if you'll just kind of work with us, it'll go quickly. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you moving the Standing Committee Amendment?
Yes, ma'am, and I did.
You've heard the motion of the Standing Committee Amendment? Oh, all right. Sorry, we'll just move to going through the bill. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I believe the recommendation of the bringer of the amendment was to discuss it in the context of the bill and then vote on it at the end. I will discuss Article 1 of the bill. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to really rip through this. So, and then I'll be happy to respond to questions if there are any. But let's just take a once over and see if anybody has any heartburn. It begins in Article 1, which I want to review. It has a set of definitions. Nothing very startling in there. There are some clarifications, like member-managed liability company. I'm on page 4 at line 33, means a limited liability company that qualifies under this other section. Basically, we now recognize a member-managed liability company. On page 6, nature, purpose, and duration of limited liability companies. Notable on page 7 at line 5, it can have a perpetual duration. Line 8, they can be limited liability companies can be organized for any lawful purpose. And I, just as an aside, one of the reasons this act is so important is the limited liability company has become the business entity of choice. There are a few unique situations where a subchapter S corporation would provide a tax advantage that limited liability companies don't, but it's very specialized. And it's interesting to note that you can now form a limited liability company and then elect to be taxed any way you want to. And as a matter of fact, you can form a limited liability company and make a sub-S election, file a 2558, I think it is, and actually have a limited liability company that's taxed like a subchapter S corporation. So this is the business entity in the United States that we're going to use. And I think some of the changes in here recognize the fact. You might wonder, why does this get thicker and thicker and thicker? Well, I think the reason is because this is becoming the predominant business entity in the United States. On page 7 at the bottom, we have the governing law. Page 8, beginning at line 8, defines the different ways that a limited liability company can be named and designated. Basically, the purpose of that is to make sure that when you're doing business with one of these, you understand or have notice of what kind of an entity you're dealing with. Line 39 on page 8 just provides for a way to reserve the name. Then I do want to spend a little bit of time beginning on page 9 at line 11, the operating agreement. This act is going to act as the default provision as an operating agreement for any companies that don't have an operating agreement. It is possible to form one of these and never enter into an operating agreement. It happens more frequently than one might think. And so if a limited liability company is formed and no operating agreement is ever entered into, then this section that begins on page 9 at line 11 is going to have a lot of influence over how decisions are made when there's no other guidance. And the one that the one provision in here that really received a lot of attention from the committee and got changed back and forth a couple times begins on page 10 at line 10. The standing committee amendment deletes that subparagraph or Romanet 4, and I want you to understand the meaning of that. The real question is, with respect to operating agreements, do you draft your way into provisions or do you draft your way out? And this provision for operating agreements says you draft your way out. And so it says in this section on operating agreements, all these things are going to apply, but you can draft your way out of them. By agreement, by operating agreement, you can take yourself out of them if you want to. And Romanet 4 said, the effect was, you could draft your way out of. In other words, you could provide in your operating agreement to eliminate the duty of loyalty, duty of care, and other fiduciary duty. And that's been the subject of more controversy in this act than anything else that went on. We finally settled on this and said you cannot draft your way out of that. A limited liability company is going to be subject to the duty of loyalty, duty of care, and other fiduciary duties, and you cannot eliminate that through an agreement. That is just going to be part of the law of limited liability companies, and just accept that. Then page 10 at line 34 has some esoteric stuff about effect on persons becoming members. It says if you become a member, you become subject to the operating agreement, and you agree that you're going to do that. Much like if you buy stock in one of our major corporations, then the stock that you own, it's understood. It's subject to the bylaws of that corporation, the same idea. Page 11, line 8, are the really esoteric provisions on how an operating agreement that hasn't been communicated to other people is going to be treated as amongst those who know about it versus those who don't know about it. Page 12 at the top requires a registered office and registered agent, and that completes Article 1. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to respond. Otherwise, I would defer on the next article, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Brown. Representative Lovenow?
There's a question.
Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just one comment, actually. I'm sure most people here probably understand the changes that have taken place in here more than I have. And I guess I just wanted to ask what kind of input the public had into this. I don't see anything wrong with what I've read, but knowing that we're going to vote on this very soon, I just want to have some comfort that there's been public input and hopefully things are being pointed out that are the major changes in this bill. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Brown.
Madam Chairman, of course the meetings of the committee when this was considered were public. There was not a lot of public input there, frankly. However, we had a working group, and I can say without qualification that working group involved the best business lawyers in the state of Wyoming, from border to border. And we had some that one from Sheridan participated extensively by conference call. And we spent untold hours. In fact, I wasn't able to participate in all the working group meetings that were had. They were meeting once a week for 2 to 3 hours at one point. And it's had a lot of input. It's been sliced and diced and debated amongst all of them. And they all have their various clients' interests in mind, and I take a lot of confidence from that we've been through this and that this act is ready for prime time.
Thank you. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll move on to Article 2. And just a very quick overview. Article 2 deals with sort of the basics of filing and forming a limited liability company. It includes outlining what the articles of organization need to contain, how to amend those articles, et cetera. The one thing I would comment on Article 2 that is a change is typically or historically in Wyoming, you have had to have more than one member to form a limited liability company. We in Wyoming went through and set up what's called a flexible limited liability company just so single members could form LLCs. What this revision does is it does allow for single-member LLCs just as a regular LLC instead of as a flexible limited liability company. So that is a small change that now you can, as a single member, form a limited liability company. And, again, that sort of squares with what's been happening across the rest of the nation. And with that thumbnail overview, I'd take any questions.
Representative Shepherdson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What's the difference between a flexible LLC and a regular LLC?
Representative Stepson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. There are a few small differences, but really that is the main difference, is that if, under a flexible limited liability company, you can form as a single member, and historically under a regular LLC, you couldn't. And so we really just created this flexible LLC so that you could do what we're saying you can do right now, which is form as a single-member limited liability company. And, in fact, I would not be surprised but see after we get this bill in line, this process rolling, that maybe a few years down the road we will probably come back and take out the flexible limited liability company.
Thank you. Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm here to talk about Article 3 of the Limited Liability Company Statutes. Those are the rules for dealing between the members and the managers to persons outside the limited liability company. It's important to know that Wyoming was the pioneer of the limited liability company, and the reason that limited liability companies exist and became popular was because of an Internal Revenue Code ruling that said you could treat a limited liability company and tax it as a partnership. So, in general, a limited liability company operates like a partnership, and that's what the theory is behind the Limited Liability Company Act. If you look on page 21 at the bottom, It says that a member is not an agent of the limited liability company solely by reason of being a member, so that that person, just by virtue of membership, cannot bind the limited liability company. If you look at the bottom of page 302 and on, or 21, 22, and 23, that allows a limited liability company to file with the Secretary of State or in a county where the limited liability company owns real estate, a statement of authority telling people, the public, bankers, et cetera, what those people's rights are with respect to dealing with the limited liability company. This is new and different than our current Limited Liability Act and allows people who are creditors to determine or people doing business with the limited liability company to determine who has authority. Seven on the bottom of page 29 or 24 allows for a statement of denial of that authority. And then the key to the entire Limited Liability Act is found at the top of page 25, which is the provision that says that just by virtue of being a member of a limited liability company, you're not liable for the debts and obligations of the company, that it's has a liability shield. With that, I would take any questions on Article 3.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. How does the statement of liability under 304 there on page 25, does that alter the case law as it stands or the interpretation of liability under the existing statute or case law?
Representative Lubnow.
Madam Chairman, as we understand it, no. And these, as a matter of fact, this act is based upon a model act. And so because the language is very, very similar, we've got some home cooking provisions in here, but by and large, it's the model act. What this does is it allows us to rely on case law of other states for guidance when there's a lack of case law in our state.
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. The way I read this, in B on page 25, the failure of a company to observe any particular formalities is not a ground for imposing liability. Are there any grounds for liability anymore of a member?
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Speaker, I'm glad you asked that. I just argued this case in front of the Wyoming Supreme Court. And one of the rules in Wyoming is that because a limited liability company doesn't have corporate meetings and corporate minutes, following the formalities of having meetings and minutes isn't a great ground for piercing the liability shield. Now, if you treat the limited liability company financially like it doesn't exist, if you ignore the entity, then those are grounds for piercing the veil. I expect more guidance out of the Supreme Court based on the argument I had last October, but they've not rendered that opinion since the argument last October, so I don't know definitively what the answer is, but I do know what the arguments are.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. One more question related to that. I think you suggested the commingling of funds. If you have an LLC account and a personal account, you use the LLC account as your personal account. How does that fit under B, where it talks about formalities relating to the exercise of its powers or management? Do you think that covers or management of its activities? Do you think that implies that you can pretty much do whatever you want with your bank accounts and that's just an exercise of power or management of the activities and wouldn't be grounds for imposing liability?
Representative Lubnow.
Madam Chairman, I didn't read it that way, but I can see how the speaker might. I don't think that, I mean, this is talking about the formalities relating to the operation of the business. I think my understanding is in terms of keeping minutes and having meetings. I don't think that this goes to the financial transactions associated with it, but I can see how maybe if the speaker would like to polish that language up, that language could be polished up.
Thank you. Are there any more comments? Right now we're on standing committee number one. You've heard the motion of the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question?
Madam Chairman, we've got six more sections of this. but if you would rather that we just skip it, that's fine with me too.
Representative Peasley.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I'm a little confused. I've been waiting for my comments until the whole bill was presented. We're going back and forth. Could we define the rules for debate so I'll know when I can jump in and when I belong on the dance floor? Okay. Thank you.
Chairman Illoway asked that we look at the standing committee amendment while we go over the bill itself. So as we're going through each section of the bill, and sorry that I cut you off right at the legs in the middle, as we go over each section of the bill itself, which has standing committee amendments associated with it, we'll also be talking about those elements of the bill.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Peasley.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman. So I can wait till the very end if my objection is general to the law, then. That's okay? Okay, thank you.
Yes, Representative Peasley. Folks, we have on this a standing committee amendment as well as a committee of the whole amendment and the bill itself. So who's doing the next section? Okay, Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Article 4 is generally a departure from the existing law. It talks about the relationship of members to each other and to the limited liability company. 1729-401 on page 25 is that provision that the representative from Natrona County described as allowing one member to be in the limited liability company. Now, the rest of the 402 talks about the contribution. 403 talks about the liability to contribution. 404 has an amendment in it and is a philosophical decision based upon how you look at a limited liability company. The Senate said that the sharing ratio should be based upon the value of the contributions that you made to the limited liability company. The Model Act and the amendment makes that equal share. So despite the contributions made, the sharing can be is in equal shares as opposed to the proportion of ownership. Now, the limited liability company operating agreement can vary from this. This is a provision in absence of a provision in the operating agreement which would address sharing ratios upon dissolutions. 405 talks about distributions when the limited liability company is insolvent and can't pay its bills, and says that if you can't make a distribution if you're insolvent. 406 says that if you make improper distributions, you're liable to the limited liability company and have to pay them back. 407 is a new and important provision. It says that you can have a member-managed or manager-managed limited liability company and provides model provisions for how you member-manage or manager-manage the limited liability company. You can vary from these in your operating agreement. One of the important provisions is on Romanet 4 on page 31, where in a manager-managed limited liability company, the powers of the manager are limited, and so consent of members is required to sell, lease, exchange, or dispose of all or substantially all of the company's assets, approve merger or conversion, or undertake any activities outside the operation of company's normal operations or amend the operating agreement. excuse me, 408 on page 32 is different than our existing statute. It requires the company to indemnify its members for actions made against the members as a result of the Limited Liability Companies Act. That's a change from our current law where that indemnification is optional. Section 409 is also new, and we can, the articles of, or the operating agreement, we can vary from those terms in 409 as well. Thank you. It sets forth the duties of care of the members of the limited liability company to the limited liability company, and it allows for, or it sets forth the duty of loyalty, the duty to account, and the duty of good faith and fair dealing, which are common law principles that were that are codified. There are some states who have limited these duties to the company in order to attract limited liability company filings. 410 is different from the existing act. It requires that if you're a dissociated member or a member of the limited liability company, that you're entitled to information on the operation of the limited liability company. We don't have those provisions in the current act, and so it turns out that you have to get into a lawsuit and get into discovery before you can get information to which you're entitled to under the provisions contained in pages 35 and 36. And that is the end of Article 4.
Mr. Speaker.
Madam Chairman, thank you. On page 26, line 16, there, subparagraph E, a person may become a member without acquiring a transferable interest and without making or being obligated to make a contribution. If that is the case, and they have no interest, do they have liability? And does anybody have liability anymore under the Act for if you're a member of a limited liability company?
Representative Lubnow.
Madam Chairman, this Act, I think you find, if you're a creditor, is a monumental departure from the way the law exists now. If you deal with a limited liability company, the only assets to which you're entitled to get are the assets of the limited liability company. And you will see when we get into, I think it's Article 5 on transferees, that the good representative from Natrona County will be talking about, that if you're dealing with a limited liability company, under this act, it's a whole and separate person. And if you're a member, you shouldn't be looking to the members of that limited liability company, absent a personal guarantee, for any assets. And I think that that's the structure of this act.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I'm sure that this is probably in the bill. But under that structure of this bill, have we made it easier for members to dissolve the entity amongst themselves? Because as it stands right now, what I've seen with limited liability companies and where the members have gone separate ways and the business is a disaster, it's really difficult because there's no judicial dissolution requirements. And does the Act address that? Not necessarily judicial, but member dissolution also.
Representative Lubnow.
Madam Chairman, it does. And when we talk about Article 6 and Article 7, it will be addressed in greater detail by people smarter than me.
Thank you. Anyone else on Article 5? Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Moving forward to Article 5, and this touches a little bit on what the Speaker's questions. And this, there's really two important points to remember about Article 5. Historically, as a member of a limited liability company, your ownership has different attributes. You, part of that ownership is management. Part of it is the ability to receive distributions. Part of it is the requirement to put in capital. So there's several different facets to ownership. And what Article 5 does is recognize those different facets and sort of splits them out. And that's the concept of this transferable interest that was referred to earlier. And that's a defined term under the Act. And what the transferable interest is that right to receive distributions. And so you can have a transferable interest, which is that right to receive distributions, and not have a right to management, not have the liability for contributions in those things, and not have the requirement to have capital contributions. And so the Act spells out this concept of transferable interest. It spells out what your rights are when you have a transferable interest. And then the other key element of that is with respect to creditors. There has been confusion historically. If you go after, you have a member of an LLC, you get a judgment against them, and they have one of their assets is membership in an LLC. Well, can you seize that? If you do seize that, what are your rights? Do you jump in and become automatically a member of this LLC, even though the other parties never wanted you to be a member, and you may not be a party to the agreement? And this really clarifies that issue, and it says, look, if you're a creditor, your sole remedy of a member, your sole remedy is what's called a charging order. And that charging order entitles you to this transferable interest, meaning you get their distributions, but you don't get anything else. So if I am suing Mr. Jones is a member of an LLC, I get a judgment against him. My remedy with respect to his ownership in an LLC is this charging order, and that means I get any distributions owed to him get directed to me. But that's the limit of my right against him, and it means that I don't get to insert myself into that limited liability company and begin managing it simply because I'm one of a member's creditors. So that in a nutshell is the main change, and it's a significant change contained in Article 5, and I take any questions on that. Madam Chairman, seeing none, I'd move on to Article 6. And again, this touches on a couple of the questions that were raised previously, and it's a new concept, and it's the concept of a dissociated member. And this has not existed under prior LLC law, but it gives us a great deal of clarity on what happens when a member ceases to become a full member of the limited liability company. And that's done through a number of ways. I mean, it may be through death, it may be through a withdrawal, it may be through a number of different things. But the Article 6 says you may be not a full member, you may have withdrawn from the limited liability company, and you then become a dissociated member. And this has sort of been a purgatory historically, and it's sort of questionable what your rights are and what your rights are not. Article 6 goes through and specifically spells out that as a dissociated member, you don't have a right to participate in management, but you remain liable on the liabilities that rose while you were a member. It also spells out that you, even as a dissociated member, you've got some obligations to that LLC, for example, protecting confidential information from that LLC. And those were things that didn't necessarily exist under the prior law. They may have, but it was unclear. And Article 6 does a good job of outlining and clarifying the rights of a dissociated member. So, again, on Article 6, it's a quick run-over, but I'd be open for any questions that you have on that.
Madam Chairman, I'm sorry.
Mr. Speaker.
I just needed to ask a question on Section 5 on page 38, lines 41 through 45, on the charging order. Typically, when you have a judgment and then a satisfaction of the judgment, the judgment creditor files the satisfaction, not the judgment debtor who actually pays it. Why is the judgment debtor allowed to file a, a satisfaction.
Representative Stepson.
Mr. Speaker, without checking my notes, I think that's language from the Uniform Act. I'm not positive, and I can check into that further for you. But I think that's simply the way it was contemplated under the Uniform Act, and that's the way we put it in there.
Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Madam Chairman, with respect to Article 7, and this does address the question I think previously raised, starting on page 43 at line 37, a limited liability company is dissolved and its activities must be wound up upon occurrence of any of the following, and then it runs through a laundry list. And I'll just mention those briefly. Anything stated in the operating agreement that would cause dissolution, the consent of all the members, the passage of 90 consecutive days during which the company has no members, on application by a member, the entry of a court order dissolving the company on grounds that the conduct of all or substantially all of the company's activities is unlawful or it's not reasonably practical to carry on the company's activities in accordance with the articles in the operating agreement, or on application of a member or disassociated member, the entry of a court order dissolving the company on grounds that the managers or those in control in the company have acted or are acting or will act in a manner that's illegal or fraudulent, or have acted or are acting in a manner that's oppressive and directly harmful to the applicant. And I think, Madam Chairman, that roughly parallels conceptually the grounds under which one can apply for a judicial dissolution of a corporation. Then beginning on page 44 at line 30, it discusses winding up, a long-involved subject that says, well, once a company is dissolved, the act of dissolution does not end the company. All it does is end the company's ability to do any business except winding up its current business. And this walks us through a long set of provisions about how to wind up a company. Then on page 46 at line 31, it discusses known claims against the dissolved company and how those are handled. And then on page 47 at line 36, we talk about other claims against the dissolved limited liability company and how those are handled. That takes us to page 49, administrative forfeiture of authority and articles of organization. This dovetails in with some of the work that we did last year on corporations. Line 4 on page 49, if a limited liability company's registered agents filed its resignation with the Secretary of State, that can trigger an administrative dissolution. Paragraph B, line 30 on page 49, if the company's failed to pay its annual fees and keep itself current, then it can be administratively dissolved, and you can see that magic number of 60 days on line 39 of page 49. And that takes us through to page 51, distribution of assets when it winds up. And this follows, I think, fairly traditional practice about how assets are distributed first to the creditors and then to the members in proportion. So that completes Article 7. If there's any questions, I'll stand for them.
Are there any questions on Article 7? Moving on to Article 8, Representative Stepson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Article 8 is reserved, so that's Article 8. And then I'll move on to Article 9. Article 9 spells out if you have actions by members, there's two kinds of actions with LLCs, well, more than two, but two contemplated by this article. One is if you have a direct action by a member against the LLC for some beef they have with the LLC. The other is a derivative action, which is an action brought by a member, but it's on behalf of the LLC. So saying that maybe the management is not right or something needs to be changed, but the true plaintiff is the LLC and not necessarily the individual member. This article splits out the procedures for both those types of actions and does it in greater clarity than we've had in previous law. It spells out who proper plaintiffs are in those kinds of actions. One of the key things, and probably the key thing about this article, is on page 53, there are new provisions setting up special litigation committees. And this is sort of common in the corporate world, that there hasn't been this express authority under statute for the LLC. And that is, if you have one of these actions, those members that aren't, that are sort of, they're interested, but they're bystanders to the litigation, can set up a committee to sort of, and the structure is set out here under 1729-905, they can set up a committee rather than having it sent to a court to deal with some of these inter-LLC fights. And it's a good sort of tool to avoid the expenses of litigation and to get it handled in a more informal and collaborative way. So that's the nature of the changes in Article 9, and I'd be open for any questions.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. I noticed throughout the Act that there's references to the member-managed company. If you have a non-member-managed company, do you avoid, does your LLC avoid some of these restrictions or the abilities of other members to kind of address problems?
Representative Stepson.
Madam Chairman, if you have, so the alternative to a member-managed LLC is a manager-managed LLC, and you don't have some of the same problems in that sort of arrangement, because if the manager isn't doing their job, if they're not living up to their duties, you just fire them, hire a new manager. But if it's a members that are responsible, not only are there additional duties incumbent upon a member, including those fiduciary duties of a member, but it's harder to just plain fire them. And so that's why some of these things will apply to a member-managed LLC, but not to one in which you hire a manager.
Thank you. Representative Lubnow, is it?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Article 10 talks about merger, continuance, transfer, and domestication. Article 10 describes how to transform an LLC from one type of entity to another. Section 1002 addresses the merger or combination of two or more existing LLCs, including mergers between Wyoming LLCs and LLCs from other jurisdictions. It describes the necessary elements of the plan, and a 10,000 or 1003 requires that all members must consent to the plan of merger described in Section 1002. 1004 requires that following the approval of merger, the merged LLCs must sign articles of merger, and then it sets forth what's in the articles of merger. 1005 describes how the property, debts, liabilities of the merging LLCs are treated after the merger. Subsection B requires that an LLC formed by merger under Article 10 consents to the jurisdiction of Wyoming courts. Article 10 is conversion. Conversion occurs when a domestic or foreign LLC changes into another form of entity. Section 1006 requires that a converted entity comply with the requirements of Wyoming's special conversion statutes, and those are 1726-101. Section 1009 describes the effect of a conversion, and subsection 109B requires that a converted foreign organization consents to the jurisdiction of Wyoming courts. 1010, on pages 61 and 64, is a continuance, and that's a new concept, and it allows dual citizenship. You can transfer to another jurisdiction and continue to be a Wyoming LLC to the same extent as if you'd been a Wyoming LLC under Wyoming law. Section 1011 is a transfer, and that's when Wyoming's LLCs transfer to another jurisdiction. It describes the application procedure and that you need to maintain an agent for service of process in Wyoming for at least 1 year after the transfer occurs. Section 1012 and 1013 are domestication. That's when somebody, a foreign LLC, registers and wants to do business in Wyoming. And it can be a dual citizenship arrangement, as I described earlier. Section 1014 requires that if the change or merger process will create and change into a different entity will create personal liability, then the members must consent to the approval of that personal liability unless the operating agreement provides otherwise, or the member agreed to the operating agreement. And then Section 1015 recognizes that other provisions of Wyoming law may allow merger, conversion, continuance, transfer, or domestication. And that concludes Article 10.
Representative Brown.
Article 11, if you're ready, Madam Chairman.
For any questions on Article 10, we'll move on to Article 11. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Article 11 contains miscellaneous provisions. There are a couple in here that have that are really important. The first one that starts at line 5 on page 69 recognizes the fact this is a uniform act, and the attempt is to put ourselves in uniformity to the extent that we can with laws from other states. I would expect that with respect to these things to be all 50 states. Line 13 on page 69 gives the Secretary of State powers reasonably necessary to perform all of his duties under this chapter and to promulgate reasonable rules and regulations necessary to carry out the purposes of this chapter. Line 21 on page 69, application to existing domestic limited liability companies. Very important section. Except as provided in subsection B, this chapter applies to domestic limited liability companies in existence on its effective date. And the effective date of this, I think, is it is July 1 of 2010. And that's going to be almost all existing limited liability companies. The one exception would be one that said that was previously organized and said this is organized under the laws as of this date. And doesn't recognize the fact the law might change. Then B has a four-year provision in there as far as the term of the limited liability stated in the Articles of Incorporation. Line 40 on page 69 talks about the application to qualified foreign limited liability companies, those that qualify to do business in the state of Wyoming. On page 70 at the top, there are some saving provisions that try to reconcile all this transition business from the old act to the new act. Line 33 on page 70 continues a provision and just corrects it that applies to converting a corporation to a limited liability company. Line 41 on page 70 talks about the applicability of Chapter 9 to foreign limited liability companies. Page 71, line 8, application of Wyoming Limited Liability Company Act. It says it applies to close limited liability companies to the extent not inconsistent with the provisions of this chapter. Line 17 on page 71 defines a close limited liability company, something that already exists in the state of Wyoming, it's already recognized. Line 26 on page 71 indicates the articles of organization of a close limited liability company shall include a statement that the company is a close limited liability company. Then there are some technical directions to the LSO and some renumbering provisions, and that concludes Title 11 concludes the review of the bill, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Brown. Are there any questions? All right. Thank you, Representatives Brown, Lubnow, and Stubson, for that thorough overview. We're on the Standing Committee Amendment right now. You've heard the motion of the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Do I hear a question? Oh, I'm sorry. There is a Committee of the Whole Amendment. Representative Brown?
Madam Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 and urge your favorable consideration. It's page 49, line 46. And that accomplishes the same thing as the other bill I had that said, with respect to all the different business entities, we're not going to double tax them for violating that 60-day period and becoming administratively dissolved. We're simply going to tax them once and assess a fee that makes the state whole for all the costs incurred because of the late filing. So this changes this bill to be consistent with one that we already passed, and I would urge your approval.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Is there any other discussion of the bill? Question being called. Representative Peasley, and I knew you were coming.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And it's about lunchtime, so I'm going to try to keep this brief. I want all of you to look at me just for a second, and I want you all to ask yourselves, do you really understand this bill? Have you really thought about it? We've had a LLC law in Wyoming now we're into the fourth decade. There's only really been two lawsuits filed under this law. One of them was a very confusing mess out of Fremont County, and the other one was a discombobulated ranching operation over in the high plains of north of the University City. These are the only two cases. Now, the one out of Fremont County came down three or four times, and it had nothing to do with flaws in the law. It had to do with flaws in an operating agreement drafted that didn't allow for an adjustment when it was applied to the law. The other one, and it's kind of an interesting case, was one where four cowboys got together, everybody threw in a little money, yippee-yi-oh, buckaroo, they took off, ran a ranch for a bunch of years, and then they turned around and found out they didn't have an operating agreement. And what was funny was the way our law works, and think about it. Now listen, really think about it. 20 pages, that little law has got thousands upon thousands of businesses organized under it. And now we're going to shut all those down in 4 years unless you go in and adjust. And I want all of you, whether you vote for it or against it today, if this bill moves on over the weekend, those of you that go home, call your general practicing attorney and ask them, is it really broken? Now, there's some that will say it is, because there's the people get into these and they drop these operating agreements and then the agreements make it bad. But this bill, the way it is now, the LLC law, and I want you all to visualize this, we created the most unique entity ever in American business. Back in 1977, we said it's going to be as simple as coming together on the barnyard in the backyard, and everybody's going to chip in something, and we're going to go out and do something. And all we want to do when we do this, before we jump in, we want to define who's in, who's playing the game, what are you putting into the game, so that we can limit our risk to that, and then off we go. The default rules are so beautiful in this. And I want to tell you, I never liked an LLC. I kept looking at it, and I kept staying with my corporations for 20 years of law until finally I realized the default provisions of this are simple. Once you get into the game, you ask the state of Wyoming, give us an umbrella of liability. Protect us a little bit. Let us put what we need underneath that umbrella, and then let us work out our own deal. And let us proceed as this entity. And the default rules are this, ladies and gentlemen. When you jump in, if you don't get a contract, our law says you participate in the management in proportion to what you put in. So if you bought the ball and the glove and the bat, you're probably going to be in control of the ball game, aren't you? Now, if all you toss in is a few peanuts, you might have a smaller one, but you agree in advance on what the value of your contribution is, and from that point forward, everything falls from that. It's primordial. It's as old as Adam Smith. You participate in according to your risk. You participate in the management. You participate in the profits, the losses, and the distribution. Now, here's the problem. Our problem with our statute is it gives you too much freedom. And I know how we just hate freedom in this state. We want somebody to protect us. So what happens is these people get into these things, then they screw it up in their contractual dealings. And I understand that. And it gets to be a mess. And it's hard to get out of. And I'm not saying this law doesn't need some adjustment. I wish to heavens in the one that happened recently, and in fact is like the representative from the coal city, I've got one in the Supreme Court, and it's that particular case. But it you wish there was a way to just say, hey, everybody, here's how it works. But when you look at it, the statute says it. If you jump in and four guys put in $25 and another guy puts in $500 and they don't agree otherwise, that's the proportion that they share in everything. Now, here's the freedom part of this. The default part, I don't know how anybody can argue with that default. Now, and yet this law seems to, the one we've got coming says it defaults in not in proportion to what you put at risk, but it's numeric. So if there's five of us in, and I put 100,000 in, and all the other guys put in 100, unless we agree otherwise, it's five-way split on management, which I don't think is good. But I don't really want to talk about specific sections. I want you to instead, seriously, find out what is fundamentally wrong with this. What is wrong with what we have? And here's what happens, is too many lawyers get too busy, then we have little cabals of attorneys who become experts in LLCs, and then they try to apply LLCs to interstate business, or they try to apply LLCs to a family situation, or they try to apply LLCs to a bunch of estate tax planning. And then they draw up these complex operating agreements, and dear goodness, the gentleman referred to in here is the best business lawyers in the state. I've dealt with all of them. They are brilliant. They make me look silly. I go to them when I get in trouble. But I'm going to tell you, they are working on a higher level than most of us. Most of us have got Charlie, Chuck, and Fred, and they want to get into a concrete business, and they come in and they get their little business going, and one throws in a pickup worth $1,500, one throws in a mixture worth $2,000, one's got some tools and a few contacts, and they agree what it's worth. And after it's all done, you've got your ratio set up, your percentages, your contributions, and then they file with the Secretary of State, and bingo, the magic of the great state of Wyoming steps in, puts a little umbrella over them, says, all you little boys go out and play, have fun. Here's how you have to do it. If they get in a fight, it's their problem. And that's one of the reasons why we're here trying to fix it. Everybody's going out and getting in trouble, and now we want to bring them back in and say it's okay. No more boo-boos when you get in trouble in Wyoming, because we've got a now, instead of 20-page bill, we've got an 80-page bill that covers all of those little default provisions. So I tell you what, I know these people work because I attended three of their sessions. I do not deny that there was a lot of work went in this by a lot of great lawyers. Not one of them was as stupid as me. And unfortunately, we have a lot of attorneys out there just like me who do a lot of LLC work, but it's part and parcel of everything else we've done. And I want to tell you another, and I don't want to use up the lunch hour, but one of the interesting cases is after the famous case out of Fremont County, what we call the dot-com case, came down, everybody went running around, and my gosh, we had set up hundreds of these little LLCs. And family would come in, mom and dad want to put the farm in their name and give portions to the kids, and then we get a little set up the articles of organization for the LLC, and off they go. We tell them, okay, you got to come back and get the operating agreement, but they don't come back. So hundreds of these have gone out the doors over a period of years. And then we read all these cases out of Fremont County. They went through number 1, 2, 3, and 4. The Supreme Court finally got frustrated in 4 and just said, well, we're just going to end it. And they did. But again, it was the same case. But when that one came out, by then we had notified all the people we had drawn up these LLCs for, brought them in, and we said, you need an operating agreement. Well, why do we need an operating agreement? Everything's going fine. They'd been filing tax returns. They'd allocated profits and losses according to contributions. Their accountants had adjusted the capital accounts and all that little fooling around. We don't want to pay you to draw one of those darn things. So what I came up with, I drew up an operating agreement that reads just like our statute. It just follows the existing statute almost section for section and says, unless we agree otherwise, we're going to share in accordance with in proportion to our contributions. And unless we agree otherwise, we're going to manage in accordance with our contributions. And it just went right through it. And so what we gave them was an operating agreement that parroted the statute, and they were happy. Now, they didn't need it because our statute covered that. Now, I'm not telling you that there aren't a lot of reasons to use this if you really want to have the cradle-to-grave protection. But let me add my second, and you've heard this rant before, so I will not. The first person whose stomach growls will shut me down, okay? The other thing that bothers me about this is we take these laws. We've got a corporation law that has become very, very, very complex. And years ago, I did bankruptcy work. And that bankruptcy law got so complicated, I got out of it. Now we have a cabal of very, very good bankruptcy lawyers, but they have to stay in that area and stay up on it. And prior to that, it was the tax laws got too complicated. I had to get out of that. Securities law, that was even before my time, lawyers were moving out. And then trust law now has become quite complicated because it dovetails with a lot of tax planning. So your general practitioners are going to be gradually pushed to the wall, and that's okay. Who needs them? We really need these specialists to come in and show us how to do it, and they need to prepare these 200-page documents that really will work for everything. But I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of people out there that kind of like this law. There's a lot of them that like the simplicity and the purity of it. And it is funny because in 1977, we were the pioneers. And now, well, we're going to go back and adopt the Uniform Act, and now all these other states have agreed to, and we're going to jump in line and march in step. I don't know that that's good. Now, I'm not telling you how to vote. I'll probably be a no vote. Well, I will be a no vote. But I can't understand anything in this law that we can't already do. But here's why it's important to understand this. Right now, other than getting the articles filed and fixing your contributions and registering with the state, it's all up to you. And I guess if we're too lazy to do it and do it right, and in the case out of Fremont County, like I said, the problem was the attorney drew up a great big old long document that didn't provide an exit strategy. Now, trust me, every operating agreement in the state now has an exit strategy in it. Go talk to your lawyers. I'm not trying to persuade you one way or the other to vote, but I can tell you this, that what I would like to see, if the world wants to move on and leave me behind, I just wish you'd leave this law on the book and go out and form your own darn LLCs. Get another law to use for it, because I like it, and I've called every attorney I can get a hold of in my district and said, do we need to completely overhaul it? None of them say yes. Now, I've talked to others, one I talked to just during the session here, and he said, oh, yeah, I don't like it. Anything could be better than this. And maybe there are those out there that think that. But I can tell you, those that I've talked to don't feel that way. And when I did get involved in the process of doing this with all these great attorneys that put this together, by the time I got involved, the train had already left the station. They'd gone too far on it. It's a very complex law. It covers so many things. It's so eloquently written. It is a cradle-to-grave sort of thing for the LLC world. But I'm going to tell you, I still like it. I still like to have those four cowboys come in and say, we just want to get going. Yippee-yi-oh, buckaroo. I got a horse. He's got a trailer. And we're going to go, you know, do something. And they're able to do it. And we can put together the articles and a simple operating agreement, let them get going. And then as they get big, they get to move to the big towns and hire those big business attorneys, and they can fancy up their corporation or their LLC if they want to. But let them get that humble start. Anyway, I'm speaking, again, generally against the bill and asking all of you to at least look into it, talk to your friendly local attorney, not your Philadelphia one, and come back and vote eventually on this according to your conscience. Thank you, and have a good lunch.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think I'm going to save myself some money, and rather than asking my attorney at home who's going to charge me for the advice, I'm going to ask all of you attorneys who have been debating this. When my husband and I formed an LLC, we, of course, had to pay hundreds of dollars to our accountant to tell us, which we should do, which was the LLC. And then he directed us to our attorney, who we paid hundreds of dollars to, so he could write up the documents and show us how we filed. And so my question for you today is, if I vote for this bill, will I have to go visit those people again and pay him again to make sure that I'm up to speed with the new law that you're talking about, even though I'm content with it as it exists? Really, will I have to go again and have things revamped to meet with the new law? Representative Brown.
Well, Madam Chairman, let's see if we can restore a little order here. Do you understand everything that's in this bill? I doubt it. I've got my statutes down there, and it's interesting to me that very few people have their statute books here with them, and those that do would be the first to admit they don't understand everything that's in the statute books from one end to the other. So we work our way through these things a section at a time, and this particular section has had huge scrutiny from people who work with this law every day. And I think that's what we typically rely on when we have committee meetings. We call in agency heads. We call in experts. We listen to people that work with whatever the particular subject matter is every day. And we did send notices of that working group to every member of the bar. They all knew about it. I think the public that had any interest in it knew about it and participated. And so all I can tell you on that score is, do we understand everything that's in it? No, I don't think so. Does somebody? Yes, I think so. I think there, and believe me, I can tell you, and I think the previous speaker would agree that this thing was scrutinized sentence by sentence. And if we had to pay a bill on the attorney's fees for the time that was put in this at the hourly rates that these people charge, I'll guarantee you that bill would be somewhere north of $100,000. There's been so much time put in this. So that gives me confidence that it's been looked at. Now, we hear, well, there's only ever been two cases filed in the state of Wyoming on LLCs. Well, the one case, the dot-com case, is a mess and illustrates the fact that our law has deficiencies in it. And the fact that there have only been two cases filed doesn't mean that there aren't other points of contention. So how are those points of contention resolved? Usually by your lawyers, usually in a fashion designed to minimize legal fees. That is by reference to decisions on similar points in other states where a lot of energy and effort's been expended in briefing and in going through sort of the same process we go through in here. And we know as we go through debate, new ideas emerge and ideas change and we become better informed. And so if we have the case law from other states and it's well thought out case law and we see what the issues are and how it's going to come out, those cases can be settled. That is the advantage of this Uniform Act. That is the reason that we want to move forward and adopt the Uniform Act. There's some home cooking in here. We're going to have some variations. One of our senators down in the other end of the hall, who's not a lawyer but is on par with all the lawyers in this working group, had some home cooking ideas that went into it. We all did, and there's some in there. But generally, this act now is a body of law that comports with the body of law in many other states. So we don't have to go try every case that comes up. We can look at decisions in other states, and based on those decisions, we can see how it's going to go. That's important, and we can go ahead and settle it, resolve it one way or the other. Because at the point where you're howling at the moon, most parties will stop howling. Now, as far as shutting down in 4 years, that's not exactly right. They won't shut down in 4 years. It depends on how your current operating agreement is drafted. Should you go see your attorney after this law is passed? Yes, but you probably should have been seeing your attorney before this law is passed because there's evolving case law all the time, and there's things that's just human nature. And your operating agreement needs periodic review to be sure as different concepts and elements in the law evolve that your operating agreement is current to it. Now, what about this elusive idea of simplicity? And we're destroying simplicity. Understand that our current LLC law, it is something that was started in Wyoming, and a lawyer in this very town was the one who was successful in getting the ruling from the IRS. Did you hear that? The IRS that blessed this as a business model. Now, what were we trying to do in the first place? We had two conflicting things we were trying to resolve. One is the idea of partnership accounting. And partnership accounting makes profits taxable just once, as opposed to corporation accounting, which makes the profits taxable twice. In a corporation, the corporation makes the money and it's taxed at the corporate level. And then if that money is distributed to the shareholders, it's taxed again at the individual level. There is a subchapter S election that allows single taxation instead of double taxation, but subchapter S corporations have lots of limitations on them. For instance, a trust can't own stock in a subchapter S corporation. So for that reason, people said, gee, I wish I had a way that we could have the accounting and tax advantages of a partnership instead of a corporation, and at the same time have that one thing that a corporation gives us that we're all comfortable with, which is it relieves us of vicarious liability. And if you own stock in a large corporation, you understand that if that corporation augers in, you may lose your stock, but that's it. There's not going to be some creditor that comes and says, the corporation was running into the red, and there's a negative number there, and we need some money out of your personal assets. Your stake in the deal is your investment. And so we said, wouldn't it be nice if we could get a business organization that was taxed like a partnership but gave us the protections from vicarious liability of a corporation? That was the birth of the LLC, and there is an attorney here in Cheyenne who tried it. It had been tried before, but he was the one that got it together and finally got the IRS ruling that said, yes, we will allow this company, which protects one from vicarious liability, to be taxed like a partnership. That is huge. That is just huge in the world of business. And it's so huge that limited liability companies have now, I'm not kidding you, become the predominant business model in the United States. And as I said before, you can make an LLC be taxed any way you want to. And there are esoteric reasons to form an LLC but not want to be taxed as a partnership. Maybe want to be taxed as a corporation or taxed with a subchapter S election. You can do that. But the LLC is the most flexible and the most workable model in the United States, and it's become the predominant form. Now, what happens when it becomes the predominant model for doing business? That means that in 50 states, and we have some states like Delaware, is a huge business state, if you know anything about corporate law, that our country is crawling with people, with ideas, innovative ideas, the things that we try to protect and promote in this legislature all the time. New ideas, new ways of doing things. And we say we don't want to limit those ideas any more than we have to. The converse of that is there's a lot going on. There's a lot of people thinking a lot of stuff up. And as they think that stuff up, the body of law becomes more complicated. And it's not because there's a bunch of lawyers in a room somewhere cooking up deals. It's because the lawyers in the room are running along behind these creative clients who have all these ideas and innovative things that they're trying to put in motion, and their lawyers are trying to keep up with them and keep them in the business model, primarily from two things: protect me from that vicarious liability and get me the tax advantages of a partnership that I need. That's where we are today. You can still work out your own deal, but I tell you, Charlie, Chuck, and Fred deals have got a lot of holes in them. And Charlie, Chuck, and Fred get together, throw all their money in a pot and say, let's go to cooking here. Wait a minute. Maybe Charlie's going to die tomorrow. Did anybody think about that? Maybe Chuck's going to take bankruptcy. Maybe one of them's going to get divorced. And all of a sudden, now our member in our LLC anymore isn't Fred who got divorced. It's his spouse. This isn't the deal that we ever planned on. Those are just simple examples. And it becomes much more complex than that. And we have to deal with those. The Charlie, Chuck, and Fred deal will work under this act. this act will work. But they've got to understand that there's some rules. And if they don't figure out what the rules are going to be, then it defaults. It's no different than intestate succession. If you die without writing a will, then the law of the state of Wyoming prescribes how your assets are going to be distributed. If you form a limited liability company and don't write an operating agreement, then the laws of this state are going to prescribe how your assets and your business is going to be treated when one of these unanticipated events come along. Now, here's a simple example that was given to us in the working group, and it's just brilliant in its simplicity about how complicated, how quickly this can come. The man that started the computer company that all the software in our computers is running on started it in his garage and put in $1,000. That we all know how enormous that company is today, how enormous his wealth is. Well, last week I bought $1,000 worth of stock in that. So don't I have just as many dollars in it as he has? Aren't we equal partners? What's the answer to that? We all know that they're not equal partners, but why? And that's what this law is about. That's why we have to do this. The dot-com case that was referred to had as much to do with rewriting this in my mind as anything. And if you don't think that our law needs some updating, go read that thing, which I think went to the Supreme Court, I think, three times. And the Supreme Court finally just washed it out, but it never was right. So that, more than anything, illustrates that our law needs to be updated. And if everything were okay, that dot-com case never would have happened. So there are some reasons. I think there are great reasons to do this. It's a great business model. There's great reasons for being in uniformity with the other states so that our courts and their courts can refer to each other's decisions so that lawyers who find a situation that hasn't occurred, and our state's the worst. It's the absolute worst, and it should be no surprise to anybody. But in our state, we have less case law, fewer statutes, less guidance on what to do in the field of law than any other state. And I would only point, I just know this because I have a license there, but you look at the state south of here, go get their statutes sometime and look at their statutes compared to our statutes. And it's readily apparent that their legislature's been into all kinds of things that we've never been into. But as an attorney, I have to have an answer to those things, even if our legislature's never addressed it. So life becomes more complex. People are innovative. They have fertile minds. We want to promote that. And as that happens, our laws become more complex, and not just this law, but all laws. And so I would urge you to pass this and put us in the position we need to be to give our citizens the best advantages of this business model that we can.
Thank you. Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had one of our delegation from Washington telling us that one of the great things here is we do things right. We don't necessarily hurry things. I didn't hear anybody telling me before I got down here that we needed to hurry up and get this bill passed. In fact, I didn't know this bill existed until very recently. I'm just suggesting that short of giving the public a little bit of time to see what we're doing, I don't think that we necessarily have to rush and pass it this session. I think the work that went into this is great. I appreciate the effort. I won't question that maybe there is a lot of this maybe is needed. It's not clear to me. For that reason, I rise in opposition. Thank you.
Representative Peasley.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just briefly, I was persuaded to make this very brief, so I will. Two or three things about the comments from the attorney from the High Plains and the other two horsemen of the apocalypse that were presenting this. One was the analogy about Chuck, Fred, and Tom going into business and how it'll be a mess under the old law. That's the beauty of the old law. They all throw their stuff in. They go riding off to do whatever they're going to do, and they forget to draw up an operating agreement. When one of them dies, it terminates. When one of them goes bankrupt, it terminates. And that was the problem with the dot-com case. It was contractual. The statute would have taken care of that poor fella if they hadn't had an operating agreement. Once he pulled out, the LLC would have terminated. So what it was somebody drew a contract that had an in clause but not an out clause. What I'm telling you is the reason why you will not have to go back to your attorney if it stays the way it is because the way the LLC law is now, it is, we'll help you set it up, you build it. And it all becomes a matter of contract. And contract law has been around thousands of years, the LLC law 30 years. And that's the beauty of it. It's contractual. And I want to keep it that way and have a real nice lunch.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's still a matter of contract. There are no boogeymen under the mattress. Larry, Bob, and Chuck can still go form their LLCs. If you've formed an LLC and you've gone to the lawyer, you don't need to go and visit your lawyer again. The contract is fine. Here's the problem with our current statute. What some people call beauty, other people call ugly. And there's been lots and lots of litigation in my district where Bob and Chuck and Larry get together, and Bob and Chuck want to stay in business, but they run Larry out. And what Larry has is just a worthless piece of paper because Bob and Chuck have the majority interest. And we have no rules for handling that. And this statute, if you don't draft the agreement, because it's a matter of contract, if you want to do it in a matter of contract under the statute, but if there are no rules, we provide you some guidelines for how to resolve that. Because short of that, what happens is that Bob and Chuck and Larry get together and they throw their life savings into this LLC, and then Bob and Chuck end up taking Larry's life savings or spending Larry's life savings litigating over something that doesn't need to be litigated. So what we have here is a law that goes back to the partnership concept. I know it's long. I know it's complicated. I know it's hard to read. I also know that a team of lawyers from all over the state worked on it. I know that the Corporations Committee worked on it, Joint Corporations Committee worked on it all summer long through a whole series of meetings considering this provision by provision, arguing it line by line. Yes, we do things right. Yes, we work hard on it. Yes, if we defeat this bill, you're going to waste all of that effort. And that's fine if you want to limit what the Corporations Committee can do next year, because we'll just end up doing this again and bringing it back to you next time. I'd urge you to pass it, ladies and gentlemen. This is an important piece of legislation, and the provisions are important.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Illoway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 18 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 18 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Folks, I'd like to take privilege of the floor and introduce and have you help me thank my high school intern, Amy Van Cleve, who is in the West Gallery. Amy, stand up, please. Let me just tell you, Amy is an amazing young woman. She begins her day, she's told me, at about 6:40, where she goes to LDS Seminary, then goes to Laramie High School, where she's doing 11 credit hours in dual and concurrent college classes, as well as AP, and then ends her day as president of Amnesty International and the Gay-Straight Alliance. Then she comes over here for 2 weeks, where she's worked with many of us, and has also escorted, it sounded like, thousands of third graders around the building last week. Today's her last day. Amy, thank you very, very much. Representative Escobar.
Privilege of the floor.
Go ahead.
Up in the north balcony in the red coats, you have the state officers team from the student organization called Skills USA. They're from Cheyenne, Laramie, and Douglas.
Welcome. Representative Davison.
Thank you.
I'd like just like to thank my intern as well, Samantha Pratt. She's been here for the last 2 weeks, keeping me in line and helping me with all of my work. And I think she's up by Amy. And I sure hate to see her go. I wish you could stay the whole time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Samantha. Chairman Childers.
Committee announcements?
Not yet. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the committee of the whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The reading clerk will read the...
The reading clerk will... The reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate file 18, amended and further amended, recommended do pass. I'm sorry.
I move the adoption of the committee of the whole report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Committee of the Whole report has been adopted. Standing committee reports. Oh, I don't think it's me yet.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 31 in gross, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yeagy, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred Senate File 66 in gross. Respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Byrd, Kraft, Harvey, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to re-refer Senate File 66 to your Appropriations Committee number 2.
Senate File 66 is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Committee announcements. Chairman Childers.
Madam Majority Whip, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet Monday, March the 1st at 8 a.m. to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet immediately in room 204 to hear re-referred bills, but we are going to take a few minutes prior to that to look at the Senate amendments to House Bill 1, so hopefully 10 minutes probably.
Chairman Gingery.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet now at noon to finish up Senate File 25 liens, and then just to let you know, we will meet at 8 a.m. on Monday to go over interim topics, and then we will meet with our counterparts at noon on Monday to go over interim topics.
Chairman Semlick.
Thank you. The Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, will meet with the Light Committee of the Senate upon noon recess today for the discussion of interim topics.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Madam Majority Whip. Your committee number 4, Education, probably has senators waiting for us in room H10 Education for community topics discussion immediately upon adjournment.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would announce that just talked to the Revenue Chairman in the Senate, and I'll have an announcement later this afternoon, but we'll meet at 8 o'clock Monday morning with them on intern side topics. Also, our Wednesday Bible study will be held Monday morning at 6:30 in the Hirschler Commons.
Chairman Landon.
Madam Majority Floor Whip, the committee number 10, Labor, will meet 15 minutes after recess in room 817 to discuss interim topics.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet Monday morning at 8 o'clock in Senate 19 to discuss joint interim topics.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Majority Floor Leader. Your committee number 8 will meet at 8 a.m. in room H-17 on Monday morning, March 1st, to discuss interim topics.
Any other announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the House recess until 1:30 p.m.
For those, we will be going back into the Committee of the Whole when we return this afternoon. So you've heard the motion that the House will recess until 1:30 p.m. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. The House is in recess until 1:30.